Good morning. My name is Charles Camp, representing the appellant, Mr. Bruce E. Mones. This case involves the interpretation of an agreed judgment that it was entered into by all of the parties. This was an agreed judgment entered subsequent to a confession of judgment promissory note. In the confession of judgment promissory note, limited partners in two limited partnerships were made liable because of fraudulent conveyances of property that they had received during the course of the underlying litigation. Initially, in the underlying litigation, there were two limited partnerships, the general partner and three individuals. During the course of that litigation, the limited partnerships distributed all of their assets to all of the limited partners. This was discovered, these fraudulent conveyances were discovered after the original judgment for $500,000 was entered into. There was a note that was signed on behalf of all of the limited partners, and the other named defendants other than two individuals who weren't party to either the amended note or the agreed judgment. The second amended note, or the amended note, which was the second note, specifically made the limited partners, MTC being one of them, liable to Mr. Mones. In the agreed, when there was a default under that amended note, there was an agreed judgment that was entered, and the limited partners were treated distinctly in the agreed judgment from all of the jointly and severally liable original judgment debtors, except for the two individuals that weren't parties to the amended note or the agreed judgment. The it is a fundamental error by the district court to find that the agreed judgment has been satisfied. The agreed judgment indicated that under the amended note, $287,000 approximately was owed as of June 19, 2003. Since that date, Mr. Mones has only received $272,700 on the agreed judgment.
Well, that's only if you include the payment from how do you pronounce this fellow's name?
Bebahani?
Yeah. That's only if you include that. That's only if you exclude that, right?
Yes, if you exclude the payment.
Why does that make any sense?
There was a confidential settlement entered into Mr. Bebahani, who had been found in contempt of court for failing to show up at a judgment debtor examination. The district court penalized him $2,000 a day until he
provided up to 200 and how much did you say he paid?
As of the date of the settlement with Mr. Bebahani, the contempt penalty, which was payable to Mr. Mones, was $798,000. Mm-hmm. So the order of contempt and arrest against Mr. Bebahani was an entirely separate obligation that he had to Mr. Mones as a result of the order of contempt and arrest. And Mr. Bebahani, who's a banker and who does business here in the U.S., was desperate to be able to travel to the United States and not be arrested. And so he provided papers to indicate that the most he could pay was a certain amount of money, $115,000. And he offered to pay that if we would agree to remove the contempt penalty so that the arresting part, which was what he was concerned about, so that he could travel here. And he wanted all of the money allocated to the contempt penalty, and none of it applied to the judgment. And that's what we agreed to do. And so that's an entirely separate obligation. It's as if we sold Mr. Bebahani a car. He was a judgment debtor, he owed us money, he paid money on the car to the separate obligation, and then the district judge basically said, well, the money he paid you on the car, we have to count that towards the judgment. They're two separate obligations.
Both the district court and the special master found otherwise, so the question is whether that was clear error, and your view is that it is?
Yes, I think it is.
You agree the standard is clear error?
No, I don't agree that the standard is clear error.
It's a factual determination by the magistrate and by the district court.
But this is, at a minimum, it's a mixed question of fact and law.
Where's the mixed question? The magistrate and the judge found that that amount of money was paid as payments of either principal or interest. Either that's true or not true.
That's not true.
I understand your position, and maybe you're right. I'm just trying to figure out what our standard of review
is. Right. I think you're saying, this is you're interpreting the judgment to decide how to apply it.
No. I'm not looking at that question at all. I'm only looking at the question of whether what the total amount was paid. And the special master says $362,000, and the district court listed figures adding up to $387,000. And I take it your view is those are clear error because some percentage of that was actually contempt payment.
Well, yes, they are saying in their decisions, the $115,000, they just state as a fact, $115,000 was paid on a certain date. I mean, that's a true statement that it was paid on a certain date. But under the settlement with Mr. Rebahani, where it specifically says none of the money is to be allocated to the judgment, and that was that the fact of that settlement was recorded with the court, and nobody objected at all. On October 15th, 2004, a paper was filed with the court indicating that a settlement had been reached with Mr. Bebahani and that he was released from the judgment and the order of contempt and arrest, and none of the money paid by Mr. Bebahani was being allocated to the judgment. So nobody objected to that. That was, as I said, October 15th, 2004. So now, 2008, it's way too late to object to whether or not that was incorrect. I mean, that was the agreement between the parties. The parties have a right to settle basically in any terms they want. And that was the settlement.
Does that bind the others? Why does that bind everybody else?
They're not parties to the settlement. I mean,
they're not parties to that settlement, but they're parties to this agreed judgment. The agreed judgment covers everybody, doesn't it?
The agreed judgment did not cover Mr. Rebahani. He was one of the two individuals.
Rebahani is not the other party against you in this case, right?
I'm sorry, what was your question?
Well, the question here is whether the other debtors still owe money, given that their liability was joint and several.
Yeah,
and whether other people have already satisfied that total payment.
MTC is not jointly and severally liable to Mr. Moons. That is a point that MTC makes, and I agree, because the jointly and severally liable judgment debtors are treated differently than the limited partners who are only proportionately liable. And they're proportionately liable for their share of the amended note, which is specifically incorporated into the judgment. Unlike other judgments, where you sue on a judgment, where you sue on a note, and then the note is entirely replaced by the judgment. In this case, we had a negotiated, agreed judgment, and it was agreed that the amended note was specifically, for all purposes, incorporated by reference into the agreed judgment. And so,
it doesn't say for all purposes. You just added that, right? Those words, for all purposes, is not part of the amended note. I leave aside the amended note. The amended judgment doesn't say that, right?
Yes.
Agreed judgment, I'm sorry, doesn't say that.
It's incorporated herein by reference.
Right. Doesn't say for all purposes.
Well, it was for all purposes.
That apparently is a dispute.
Well,
that is the dispute, isn't it?
Well, that is certainly part of the dispute, and that's a de novo review question. Was there any limitation on the incorporation? Because the part of the judgment that specifically makes the limited partners liable for the fraudulent conveyances says that all the limited partners who have not previously paid Mr. Moons for their pro rata shares of all amounts owed by the partnerships under the judgment and amended note are liable to Mr. Moons for all such pro rata amounts, including amounts under the amended note, plus 21% interest, attorney's fees, and expenses until the judgment is paid in full. And so it wasn't just, this was not the case of a judgment. My time is up. May I continue? This was not just a case where we took a note that was in default and got a judgment that said, as of a certain date, that's what's owed. You get that plus whatever else you get, statutory interest. This was a negotiated agreement, counsel on all sides, and we negotiated for what this was. This was intended, in essence, to create a judgment that was identical in financial terms to the amended note. It wasn't intended to change the terms. It was intended to be a judgment that had the same financial terms as the amended note. And the judgment stated what was the amount owed under the amended note as of the date that it was filed with the court. And that number was $287,000.
So this whole case does turn then on how the money from the money is treated from how do you pronounce his name?
Bebahani.
Yeah, it all turns on that, right? In other words, if we think that there's no clear error in the magistrate and district court's findings about that, then since the date of the judgment, your client's received all he's owed, correct?
No, that's not correct. Well, it is not correct that if you add in Mr. Bebahani's money, that my client would be paid in full. As of now, not counting Bebahani's money, he has received.
No. Count it. Count it as payment of principal.
Okay. The remaining net principal owed to Mr. Moons is $241,000. If you take away $115,000, my client is still owed a significant amount of money.
He's collected $385,000 if you attribute that payment to principal since the judgment, right?
Since the agreed judgment was entered into.
He's collected $385,000.
No, that's correct. No, that's incorrect. That was what was received by my client prior to entry of the agreed judgment. And all of those payments are reflected in the agreed judgment. My client received approximately $141,000, after the original judgment prior to the amended note, then he received under the amended note $312,000. These are gross payments. All of these payments were reflected in the agreed judgment. And the agreed judgment, after taking into account all of those payments, determined that my client was then owed, as of June 19, 2003, $287,000. So all of those payments were taken into account. And after the agreed judgment was entered into, where it was determined that he was owed $287,000, my client has only received $272,000. So even if you applied 100% of the money that's been received by my client since the date of the entry of the agreed judgment, it's still not paid off. Even if you didn't allocate any to interest or any to attorney's fees, he's still not paid in full. There's still a $14,000 shortfall.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Scott Badami. I am counsel for Mobile Telecommunications Company, the appellee in this case referred to as MTC in the documents before you. Your Honors, following an extensive review and evaluation, the district court concluded, as did the special master before him, that Mr. Moons had been significantly overpaid with respect to the agreed judgment at issue in this case. Respectfully, Mr. Moons is attempting to contort the language of the agreed judgment and manipulate that judgment in order to collect far much more than he's entitled to. That collection activity, Your Honors, continued unabated until MTC said, no, that's enough. Importantly, Your Honors, only Mr. Moons reads the agreed judgment in the manner he advocates before you here today. The special master, Judge Kay, absolutely criticized and rejected his analysis. Judge Sullivan, the district court, similarly rejected his view of the agreed judgment. Your Honors, the key language in the agreed judgment, as found by both Judge Kaye and Judge Sullivan, is that Moans is only entitled to $500,000 in principal payments. The district court concluded the agreed judgment is satisfied once that $500,000 figure had been reached. In fact, Mr. Moans, as the papers and the records in front of you indicate, collected approximately $250,000 more than that. The methodology adopted by the special master and the district court is sound. That methodology and the factual findings.
When you say that it's only owed $500,000 in at principal payments, what does that say about the interest?
The interest would be due from the date of the agreed judgment, June 2003, until that $500,000 is paid off. Judge Sullivan found that $500,000 was paid off as of October 03, such that he calculated interest from the date of the agreed judgment in June of 03 up until it was paid off in October of 03. He was absolutely entitled to interest during that interim period. Yes, sir. The methodology and the factual findings, Your Honors, as Judge Garland pointed out earlier, are subject to deference and should not be reversed unless they are clearly erroneous. Those are factual findings by the district court. They deserve deference here.
Who wrote the agreed judgment?
I believe it was Mr. Moans. It certainly was not MTC. MTC certainly never signed it. We were a limited partner in two of the investment vehicles in place, and we were limited partners, but we did not do the note. And we did not sign the note.
The contempt order that opposing counsel was talking about, the contempt order require a payment to Moans?
I believe it did. I think the important and the dispositive feature of that contempt order, Your Honors, is what was the point behind it? The point behind it was to get Mr. Moans paid, to get his judgment paid. The district court, following the special master's recommendation before him, made the decision that the point of that $115,000 settlement was to pay the judgment. The district court made the factual finding that that payment should be counted as payment received by Mr. Moans, and the district court included that amount in the finding.
What about counsel's argument that the parties agreed that was not to be paid to principal?
The parties, if you're referring to my client, MTC, certainly never made that agreement. We were not a party to that agreement. We challenged it when we learned about it approximately a week after. There was a hearing before Judge Kaye when we first learned the specific amount of that payment. We certainly never agreed how it would be paid and what it would be entitled to. We believed and argued at the time, argued before this panel this morning, that that amount should be counted toward the principal payments owed to Mr. Moans. This is the first time an appellate panel has taken a look at the agreed judgment. Judge Kaye and Judge Sullivan reviewed the agreed judgment for the first time. There are other additions that Mr. Moans has asked for with respect to attorney's fees. Judge Garland, I started to talk to you about the attorney's fees, interest. Attorney's fees, the same rule applies. Mr. Moans would be entitled to attorney's fees from the date of the agreed judgment, June of 03, until it was satisfied in October of 03. The same with expenses. Your Honors, the agreed judgment covered joint and several liability up until the point when the $500,000 is paid off, thus the debt is discharged. And that's what happened here. Mr. Moans has been able to collect far more than he's entitled to, such that it doesn't matter who among the various limited partners made the payments. What's important is his $500,000 principal has long since been paid off. His collection activity, as I said, only stopped when MTC stood in. In addition to supporting the district court's conclusion because of the clearly erroneous standard of review and the clear factual findings that it made, you can also affirm this case based upon DC partnership law. In that case, as we've cited in our brief, a limited partner, which is what MTC was in the two investment vehicles in this case, is not liable for obligations of the partnership unless the limited partner somehow controlled the operations or participated in it. There's been no allegation that MTC did that, and as such, under DC limited partnership law, which certainly you would be entitled to de novo standard of review there, it's certainly an issue and an argument for also affirming the district court. We appreciate the opportunity to appear before you this morning. If there are no other questions, I will rest on the remainder of our brief.
Take 1 minute.
Thank you very much. Just real quickly, with respect to my colleague's last point, under partnership law, that issue was decided in the agreed judgment because MTC received fraudulent conveyance of approximately $3.5 million. That was its share of the assets. It is liable under the fraudulent conveyance laws incorporated into the partnership laws. So there's no question that it's liable. It knew about the agreed judgment. It's too late to go back on that point. In terms of who signed the agreed judgment and the amended note were signed by the general partner on behalf of everybody, including the limited partners whom he was representing. The contempt penalty was intended to punish Mr. Bebahani for failing to show up and comply with the order requiring him to bring papers showing his assets, that sort of thing. Under the order of contempt and arrest, it was made payable. The entire thing was made payable to Mr. Moans.
Doesn't that indicate that it's not going into the court because of the punishment for the contempt that the court adjudged, but is going toward the payment of the debt?
Well, under the order of contempt and arrest, Mr. Bebahani was ordered to pay the amount then owed under the judgment to Mr. Moans, and as well as $2,000 a day until, so it was $200,000+ $2,000 a day, which by the time we settled was up to $798,000, I believe, and so that was that.
All right, you're over your time.
Thank you very much.